All right, here we are. Welcome back again to another episode of the Live Your Dreams podcast. I'm your host, Joe Kowalis, alongside my fantastic co-host,
Chris Victor.
Chris, I am incredibly excited today because not only are we at the beautiful 2024 by Southwest, we have on one of the most dynamic individuals that I've gotten to speak to so far. She is incredible. Not only has she shaped her life, she changes lives all around her. Dia Bondi, thank you so much for coming on.
So happy to be here on the Live Your Dreams podcast.
You are literally incredible. You walk through the door and energy just falls.
Thank you. And, you know, I say about my own kids, and I have to remind me about remind myself the same thing, that what is a liability as a child is an asset when you grow up. And that very thing was a problem for me when I was a kid and is an asset today.
You know, that is so well put. And we actually talked about this a few times. Children are kind of taught to shut up, listen, don't be seen. And you're absolutely right, because that's a liability then, but you need an asset as an adult.
Absolutely. I mean, not in all business, but in the business that I'm in, it sure helps.
No, absolutely. Let's talk about the business you're in, because the business you're in is so incredible and you are out there changing so many lives. I'd love for you to fill in the audience about what you're doing here on the Live Your Dreams podcast.
Well, I have been a longtime leadership communications coach for many, many years. I work with VC-backed founders who are usually at Series B and beyond, senior leaders in organizations, to help them speak powerfully at really critical moments. I've had the chance to do some really cool things, like help Rio de Janeiro win the right to host the 2016 Olympics. And a handful of years ago, I went to auctioneering school for fun. And it turns out that this impact hobby that I picked up in my 40s is something that has a lot to teach us about how to ask for more and get it. And so I launched a book this year called Ask Like an Auctioneer, How to Ask for More and Get It, using what I learned from the world of fundraising, auctioneering for women-led nonprofits and nonprofits benefiting women and girls. I know it's a mouthful. And that book has a mission to help 1 million women and underrepresented people in their industries ask for more and get it, and importantly, using asking as a success strategy so that they don't leave any money or opportunity on the table ever again. So we can put more money and decision-making power in the hands of those folks.
And what better day than International Women's Day to present this to everyone?
I know. Before we got ready to roll the pod today, I was saying that, I was thinking about my contribution, sort of where I want to aim my energy and my work in the world. I mean, we're in Women's History Month and we're on International Women's Day today. Is that, you know, not all of us are going to make history, but I do recognize that the little place where I hope my book and the work that I do can help advance women in whatever domain they're in to make personal, history in their own personal lives.
We have to at least try, right? Even if we fail, we have to at least try to get that mission accomplished.
Failure is difficult and delicious. And it's actually at the core of my core idea of my book, is to actually ask for so much. And not just money. I'm talking about the kinds of asks that can accelerate and elevate your visibility where it matters, places where you might be looking for more authority, bringing more balance into your life or career. But the whole idea is to ask for so much, you think you're actually going to get rejected.
I love it.
Because as auctioneers, that's exactly what we do. I can't sell anything until I get a no. I might ask for something in the room. I might ask for a $5,000 bid. Somebody's in at $4,800, and if they're not in at $5,000, they're going to say no, and that lets me know I've maximized the potential of that ask, and that's the core idea of how we can ask for more and get it.
I'm telling you, I love that, maximizing the potential of the ask. How important is that? Because I think there's so many people out there, they don't understand how to close and how to close correctly. Because if you just say, hey, I'll accept this, and most people do, they're leaving so much on the table in their personal lives, business lives. You're right, it affects everything.
So you want to fight a little bit?
I would love to fight.
Okay, so I love the idea of knowing how to close, like in the spirit of it. But I think about closing being the end of a process.
I love that.
No.
And
yeah.
Really, people ask me all the time, oh, so you wrote a book about negotiation? I'm like, kinda. It's really more about, negotiation is what happens after the ask.
You're right.
I really want to focus on getting really clear on, like, what is it that you're asking for? How will it have a strategic impact on the goals that you have right now in your business, career, or life? And then importantly, how do you craft that ask and design it big enough so that it can maximize its own potential? The negotiation, the conversation that happens, everything after that is usually an outcome of that initial ask.
Yes.
So I want us to all slow down and be like, what are we asking for? and how much.
So are we asking for the most possible ask, and then you settle for what's less or negotiate for what's less, if anything?
Correct. So the idea of asking like an auctioneer is exactly that, that you're going to go for what you think will actually be rejected. The tricky part is half the time I hear from women, and I teach my workshops and in my keynotes, I have mixed gendered rooms all the time. Oh, sure. Now, this is relevant to everybody. There's nothing particularly gendered about the content, but I just want to make sure that we put it in the hands of the people that, you know, are in a position to need it the most.
Yes.
So, the idea is to ask big enough such that you actually intentionally go for rejection. What's surprising for people is they think they're going to get a shutdown and they get a yes. And what does that tell us? If we thought we were going to get a no and we got a yes right off the bat, what does that mean? It means we probably could have asked for more.
For more.
Which means we've left money and opportunity on the table. But if we ask for more than we would have if we had designed to get a yes, we end up doing better for ourselves.
That, Dia, that is phenomenal advice for anybody out there, for our listeners to get started with that, right? Because, again, you know how so many people have this kind of self-imposed pressure they put on themselves. They're afraid to get out there. What would you suggest to our listeners to kind of get out of that? How do they take that first step to say, I'm willing to ask?
So a couple things. One is we want to, I notice I close my eyes when I talk a lot, everybody, and I don't know what to tell you. It's like I'm concentrating so hard.
The sit-ups are going off. I love it.
So one thing is we have to notice when we answer the question, how much should I ask for? Whatever it is. I don't care if it's a promotion, a level of investment, a raise, a stage, and how much could be. How big is that stage, right? An opportunity to be on a podcast like this with you all. How big is that show?
Yes.
We want to ask the question, how much? And we want to listen to ourselves when we say, what do you think I can get? And then we want to make that question irrelevant. And we instead want to go, okay, what do I think I'll actually, how big do I go that I think I'll actually get a no? So that's the first place we need to pay attention to. And then when we go to do it, you know, knowing how to craft an ask such that it'll invite a little potential for rejection is really different than being able to actually do it.
Yes.
Because that takes, you said the word earlier when we were setting up, that takes courage.
Yes.
It's hard because rejection is an existential threat for us. It's no joke.
No.
And sometimes the more important an ask feels, the more we want to aim for that yes to lock it in, even though we might be actually kind of lowballing ourselves. So to get out of it, there's a couple ideas I learned from the world of auctioneering that helps me when I'm in that place, which, by the way, that place that makes us go, don't ask for quite so much. I have a name for that. Did you guys check that out before?
Did you hear? I did. It's a nice abbreviation, Z-O-F-O. Z-O-F-O.
Yes. Why don't we ask for more than we think is pretty much guaranteed? Is because everything in there, everything above that pretty sure number or size, lives in a place I like to call the zone of freaking out.
I love that because people do.
You know how that feels.
100%. Everybody does. Are you kidding me? I'd love that acronym. It was perfect.
Okay, so tell me this then. We all have our own personal zone.
Yeah.
They're told
everybody
like.
Everybody does.
Yeah, and even as I've grown in my career, and I'm sort of a, you know, I would call myself, I'm a boss lady. But my Zofo has followed me, and it's grown and changed.
Sure,
you know, it never goes away. That's what I was saying earlier, that it doesn't. We don't, you know, shut out self-doubt. We just learn to live with it and strategize around it sometimes.
Yeah.
But all of our Zofos feel a little bit different.
Yeah.
I know my, what does yours feel like? When you're in your zone of freaking out, what is it? Do you have a, is it like you get a hot feeling on your neck? Do you get like a feeling in your stomach? What is it?
I'm somebody, it is a little bit embarrassing to say, but I try to go through problems, right? So when I see something and I get in the zone of freaking out, my first thing is I get in that attack mode where we have to conquer this. We have to go through it. And I try to figure out because, again, I want to figure out that problem and bash through
it. Right. So I'm going to use maybe the word like aggression. I know that's not the word you use, but like it has an aggressive kind of characteristic
An aggressive character. I'm not attacking people,
no,
but
yes,
exactly.
Like that, like, go.
I got to go because I don't want to sit. I always feel if I sit back and wait for something, the world will never give you anything. You have to get out there and you have to be willing to push forward. That's just my interpretation,
okay,
my zone.
Do you have a feeling?
This is actually reminding me of working out. So if I put 15 repetitions in my mind, I just limited my belief. Versus just keep pressing until my muscles fatigue.
Yeah.
Now I have 20 repetitions.
Yeah, sure.
Just like going from one, having limiting beliefs.
Sure. Do you ever hear this term? So I lift a little bit also. Do you ever hear this term like being scared of the bar?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I've stepped in front of a bar and I get, sometimes when it's heavy enough, I'm like, I get that scared feeling. Not even like, even just for a deadlift or something, get that feeling of like, kind of feeling intimidated by the bar. for me, that's this. When I get that scared feeling, that's me and my Zofo. Mm. And for me, it actually feels like I swallowed a ice cold penny, and it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
So I would just invite listeners to think, like, notice how your own personal Zofo feels. Like, do you get flesh in the neck? Do you have that kind of like, oh, aggressive feeling when you notice you're like up against, I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, that oh, shoot moment.
Fight or flight.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It all has a different sensation. So when you notice you're in the zone of freaking out, it can be super helpful. I even, this expression, like, I eat my own dog food, where like, I use the stuff that I teach. So one of the ideas that I learned from the world of auctioneering is that like, people, when I go to live auction an item, I have no idea what it's going to go for. People are irrational. What they'll say, like, or you can think of it like this, that their rationale for what they might say yes or no to is not your rationale for what you think they should say yes or no.
Sure.
Like, we don't know. So our job is just to ask and find out. And if I remember when I'm in my own personal zone of freaking out, sending a proposal, approaching a new opportunity, when I went to my, when I was pitching the book, total zone of freaking out the whole time. And I would just sit at my keyboard and be like, Dia, you don't know what they're going to say. The world is irrational. Hit send. And
it
just helps me not expect myself to eliminate my zone of freaking out, but to just do it in the face of my Zofo.
I love that. That is courage 100% moving forward. Now, Dia, we talked about your book.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear about your creative process of starting that, because you are so dynamic and interesting. I'd love to see when you started on that keyboard. It fascinates me where you'd come from.
So I did learn, this is my first book.
Okay.
I've been in and around storytelling as a leadership communications coach. We're working on, think about the pitch for hosting the 2016 Summer Olympics is just basically a huge campaign. We're doing a lot of script writing and, I've been in the world of storytelling a long time, and curriculum design, because I do workshops and stuff.
Sure.
But it was my first book, and I learned a couple of things. And I kind of, when you do something, I guess this is a little obvious, but like when you do something, then you look back and you're like, oh, I figured out how I do it.
Oh,
not
yeah.
like, how do you do it? How do I
yes.
do it? And one of the things I realize is that I flip things. I workshop the heck out of content before I write a book.
Smart.
So I launched Ask Like an Auctioneer as a keynote and a workshop.
Okay.
And I ran those for 4 years.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good.
To develop the ideas. So by the time I sat down to write the content, I knew what it was. Mm. It was about telling a story of something that I had already happened in a lot of ways. Some of my author friends, they flip it.
Okay.
They write a nonfiction book and they use the writing as the way to develop the ideas. Mm-hmm. And of course I got more granular, but that was one thing. So I know when I write a second book, I'll do the same thing. I'll basically open source the content.
Yep.
And then when I know I've got it, then I write the book. So that's number one. And number two, I realize that I'm good at it.
I love it.
That is beautifully put.
And what I mean is I was proud of myself that I didn't let perfection be the enemy of the good.
Yes.
Just ship it.
Yeah.
Then we can redline it later. First drafts are wonderful. The harder part for me is the editing process. But how beautiful. We have editors in the world.
Yes. Absolutely.
You're 100% right.
So I'm like, let me do the Herculean effort of getting that first 65,000 words done. And then I'm just like, invite all the right voices to help me make it right, to make it do what it's supposed to be doing. So that's the other thing. And then the third thing was that I figured out that I write in deep sprints. So I use writing retreats.
Okay.
I put myself on a 3-day writing retreat. Tuck the kids in, husband's handled. I head on out for 3 days. And I used makeshift Kanban boards. Do you know what a Kanban board is? Oh my God, this was a total fluke. I went on a writing retreat with a friend of mine who kind of operates as a muse for me.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
She's that person that'll let me read something out loud to her. And she was gonna do work that weekend. I was gonna write, and we were like, well, how do we kind of organize what we wanna get done? And I shared with her this notion of a Kanban board, and we made a makeshift one on a big glass picture window at an Airbnb we had rented.
Nice.
And it's basically, you make categories, to do, doing, done.
Like a dream board?
No, No, it's like a project management board. It's actually, if people look it up, Kanban board is really common. They use it in manufacturing. I think Toyota was the one that invented it and perfected it in the 80s when Toyota took over, the market. Anyway, so I made Kanban boards, which is basically on a big window, I made three categories: to do, doing, and done. And then I would sit down with Post-its and I'd be like, what are all the things that I need to write this retreat? I got to relook at chapter three. I have to, I have to tell that story of that example that happened in that workshop around the idea of people are irrational. I have to write the opening scene. I need to, right? Like, I do that. And then I'd have 15 of those. And then I look at it and I go, what's the easiest one?
I love it. Yeah.
I take the easiest one, I put it in the doing category, I sit down in a chair, and I do that one, and then I move it all the way over to the right to the done category. Then I go back to the to-do list, and what do I look for? The next easiest one. And so I tricked my brain into always thinking I was doing the easy thing until I got to the down to the last two hard things, and I would pick the easier of the two hard things. And by the time I was down to the last thing, I built so much confidence with those Post-its saying done on the side that it felt less intimidating.
Yeah.
So that turned out to be like, I almost figured out what my creative machine needs in order to crank that out.
Yeah, that's so intelligent, because so many creators get bogged down with those small processes. I see it happen all the time. Now, Dia, you are somebody that has confidence. You're dynamic. You go out and get something done. Take me back to 15-year-old Dia for our young listeners out there. Did you have that same sense of confidence? When did this start building? Because for so many listeners, they go, I can't be like Dia. I'm not like that. Was it always this way for you?
Well, let me just say, you don't want to be like Dia.
You want to be like you.
Yes.
Okay. When I was a kid, I was super grumpy, and I didn't want to do anything.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I grew up in a household of, X Games didn't exist really when I was a very young kid. I don't know. When did they happen? They broke out. Like, we were probably 16, 17. Right? Exactly. I'll be 50 next month. So X Games wasn't a thing, but my family was an X Games family.
Okay.
So they made me try to do a lot of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And I didn't want to do anything. I was just, I wasn't sedentary, but like, I didn't want to do anything. Especially if you were going to tell me to do it, hard.
Yeah.
And I always had a really big personality, which always kind of put me at risk when I was a kid. So I found a lot of safety in just being with myself.
Okay, sure.
And then there was a period of time after high school where I realized that, like, I couldn't just say no to everything all the time. Like, I had to work on my own, I had to get my own motor running.
Okay.
And I just realized that action solved a lot. Like, just do something. Because while I know I'm perceived as very confident, I get that feedback a lot. I don't always feel confident. But I do trust that confidence is an outcome of action.
Yes, that's so well put, Dia. Really, confidence is an outcome of action. And you're 100% right taking action. And talking about taking action, being here at South by Southwest, you're promoting your book, you're speaking, you're doing so much. Where can we find your book when people want to get out there and actually purchase it? And where can we find you at South by Southwest?
Well, I'm all over the place. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. We're doing a few meetups here at South by Southwest, one with Latinas in Tech. These are more of like concurrent events. We're going to have a book salon at a local woman-owned shoe store and wine bar on the evening of the 12th called Blue Suede. And also, I'll be doing a book reading full-hour session at South by Southwest on the 12th at 10 a.m. and then a book signing session right after that. And let me tell you, if you come to this session or if you happen to find it online afterward and you see any of my content online, you have to know that when I'm in front of a stage, I'm 100% in my Zofo. In all the best ways, because the zone of freaking out is also the zone of potential.
That was so well put. When you start the process is the most difficult part for most people. Most people get paralyzed by fear. It's very difficult for them to actually figure out a battle plan, a game plan. How do I start writing my book? How do I make a movie? How do I sell a film? How do I get this out there? How is your advice? How do you start this off?
Well, I think you have to know what your goals are. And if you're somebody, so if your goal this year, maybe you're product of the recent layoffs and you've decided I'm going to use this opportunity to go out and build my very own design agency, a small but mighty design agency, or I'm going to use this, you know, I'm going to use this exit package as a launch pad for shooting and producing my first film, or maybe you're going out as a solopreneur, you're going to use it as a sabbatical to sail around the world. I don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to have some kind of goal. And inside of that big, huge, hairy, audacious goal, you're going to have sort of 12 to 18 month, maybe 6 month goals in mind. Yeah. And one thing I would encourage listeners to do is to unlock the potential of your network by starting to use asking as a success strategy. Yes. And here's how you can think about, people think like, oh, I love these ideas of ask like an auctioneer, but I don't have an ask coming up. I don't have a negotiation moment coming up. I'm like, look, you can order off the menu. You just need to figure out what you want to ask for. So you have a better answer to the question when people say, how can I help you?
Yeah.
It's better than like, I don't know, spread the word or follow me on social. Like, have a juicy answer for the ask that matters. So I'm going to give folks the first four steps in my six-step framework, which Please. Anybody can get for free right now at asklikeanauctioneer.com. It goes like this. You have a 12 to 18-month goal, maybe a six-month goal. Write that down. Okay. I know what my goal is. Now, you might think, well, then I got to figure out what I should ask for, right? Nope. I want you to stop for a minute, and I want you to ask yourself, what's the next big move I need to make that gets me to that goal? So if this is the year you want to write a book, you might need to, a big move you need to make is maybe you need to secure a literary agent. Or if you're going to, I don't know how movies work, but if you're gonna produce your first film, you need, you know, one large investor.
Sure.
Okay? So what's the big move I need to make? Then you can ask yourself, without worrying about whether you have a who in mind, you can ask yourself, what might I ask for that helps action my big move that gets me closer to my goal? And if you can do that, you can find one of those asks, list 3, 4, 5, and start matching up the most important ask with the network that you have, or put into your awareness, I gotta look for that right kind of profile of person.
Yes.
And have that ask in my back pocket. Now, once you have the goal, the big move, and the ask you might make, you wanna ask yourself this, because the ask is gonna have an amount associated with it.
Oh, yeah.
What are you gonna do? You're gonna ask yourself, how do I make the size of that ask Zofo-ish for me?
Yes.
How do I make it so big that I feel scared of the bar? Yeah. How do I make it so big that I'm not intentionally and or accidentally lowballing myself because I'm afraid of rejection?
Yeah.
So if you can identify what those four steps are, you're going to be well onto your way of starting to have strategic asks in your pocket to help you get to that goal that you have for yourself.
That is phenomenal advice.
Great.
One, you can find it on the website. And if they do sign up for your newsletter, then they get, you know, you obviously must give away great information like that in your newsletter.
Yeah, I do. I'll link back to both all the resources that are at the book site at asklikeanauctioneer.com, which for folks who are listening right now, maybe audio is more your jam. So you can find it, obviously, wherever you get your audio content as well in audiobook form. And yes, I read it. And also, you'll get all kinds of frameworks that we build and share. And there's a library of a few frameworks already around communications and this stuff at diabondi.com.
That is beautiful. And Dia, anywhere else after South by Southwest you're going to be speaking at?
Sure.
Because I know if you're speaking anywhere in the country, a group of people would love to come see you.
I do, but most of the speaking that I do is for, you know, private organizations and associations.
Sure.
So from here, I actually go to Dallas to do a large keynote. I'll have, hopefully, around 1,000 people in the room. But if this feels interesting to the associations that you might be part of, the communities that you're involved with, I'd invite you to reach out.
Oh, well, that's fantastic, everybody. Are you kidding me? We 100% will. Dia Bondi, again, you are a phenomenal individual. You're dynamic. You mean what you say. And what's important is you're motivating others.
Thank you.
That changes the world. What you're doing is going to change not only women, but anybody who's listening. You are really somebody. It's a blessing for you to come on. And I feel since you go to private events, we're very privileged to have this conversation with you. Are you kidding me? Dia, thank you so much for coming on. We are so excited again. Dia Bondi, everybody. We're very excited for the Live Your Dreams podcast at South by Southwest. I am Joe Gowalis.
Chris Victor.
We are so excited. We'll see everybody soon, and we'll see everybody next episode. Thank you so much.